Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Rational Optimist: How Prosperity Evolves is a popular science and economics book by Matt Ridley that argues against modern pessimism about human progress. Ridley presents a sweeping historical case that living standards, health, knowledge, and freedom have improved dramatically over long periods, especially through the last several centuries. His central claim is that prosperity emerges from exchange, specialization, and the division of labor, not simply from raw resources or centralized planning. The book connects economic history, evolutionary thinking, and the history of ideas to explain why human societies become richer when people trade, trust one another, and allow innovation to accumulate. Rather than treating progress as accidental, Ridley frames it as an evolutionary process in which ideas combine, spread, and become more productive over time. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, prosperity grows from trade, specialization, and division of labor. The book's core economic argument is that human prosperity is created through exchange rather than mere possession of resources. Ridley explains that when people specialize in what they do best and trade for everything else, productivity rises sharply because time, skill, and effort are used more efficiently. This is a classic division of labor argument, but Ridley presents it as the main engine of civilization itself. He suggests that complex societies do not become richer because one group knows everything or produces everything, but because many people contribute narrow abilities into a larger network of exchange. That network allows goods and services to be produced more cheaply and abundantly than isolated self-sufficiency could ever permit. The explanation also matters because it shifts attention away from static measures such as natural wealth and toward dynamic processes such as commerce, comparative advantage, and cooperation among strangers. In Ridley's view, these exchange systems are what made large-scale human progress possible and why prosperity kept expanding over time. Secondly, trust is the social condition that makes productive exchange possible. Ridley does not treat trade as automatic or purely mechanical. He argues that exchange works well only when people trust one another enough to cooperate across distance, time, and social boundaries. Trust lowers the cost of trade because it reduces the need for constant enforcement, suspicion, and coercion. In that sense, trust is not just a moral virtue in the book. It is an economic infrastructure. Ridley uses this idea to explain why societies with stronger networks of reciprocity, reliability, and informal cooperation tend to generate more wealth. The point is important because it shows that markets are social systems, not just pricing mechanisms. Productive exchange depends on norms, reputation, and the expectation that agreements will be honored. Without trust, specialization becomes fragile and trade becomes expensive or impossible. Ridley's emphasis on trust also helps distinguish his argument from simplistic free market cheerleading. He is interested in the social habits that allow markets to function, not only in the ideology of markets themselves. This makes trust a central bridge between economics and culture in the book. Thirdly, ideas evolve cumulatively through combination and recombination. One of the book's most distinctive themes is Ridley's claim that ideas, like organisms, can evolve through selection and combination. He describes innovation as a cumulative process in which new ideas are built from earlier ones, often through unexpected recombination. His memorable phrase, "ideas having sex," captures this logic. Different concepts meet, merge, and generate something more useful than either idea alone. This is how invention accelerates, according to Ridley, because each generation inherits not only tools and techniques, but also a growing store of knowledge that can be mixed in new ways. The implication is that progress is not mainly the result of isolated geniuses working in a vacuum. It depends on broad networks of exchange in which knowledge is shared, tested, improved, and reused. That makes innovation collective as well as individual. Ridley's argument here gives the book much of its intellectual energy because it links cultural development to evolutionary logic. He portrays civilization as a kind of cumulative intelligence, where each small advance creates more opportunities for later advances, producing long-term acceleration in prosperity. Fourthly, human history shows a long trend of rising welfare, despite short-term disasters. Ridley builds his argument on a very broad historical frame, comparing the harsh conditions of early human life with the much higher material standards of the modern world. He stresses that for most of history, people were constrained by scarcity, disease, poor sanitation, limited transportation, and little privacy or safety. Against that background, he argues that modern people are better fed, healthier, cleaner, freer, and more secure than their ancestors. This is not presented as a denial of suffering, but as a rebuttal to the habit of seeing the present as uniquely disastrous. Ridley wants readers to distinguish local setbacks from long-run trends. Wars, famines, and economic crises can be devastating, but they do not necessarily overturn the broader trajectory of improvement. The strength of this topic lies in its scale. It pushes the reader to think in centuries rather than news cycles. By placing modern life inside a long arc of technological and social change, Ridley argues that optimism is not naivete, but a reading of historical evidence. This long-view perspective is central to the book's purpose and structure. Lastly, Ridley is skeptical of centralized power and overly alarmist thinking. A major argumentative thread in the book is Ridley's distrust of governments and top-down control when they interfere with exchange and innovation. He argues that institutions often become rigid, predatory, or self-protective over time, even if they begin with useful purposes. From this view, bureaucracy and central planning can obstruct the spontaneous processes that generate wealth and invention. Ridley extends that skepticism to some forms of environmental and economic alarmism, arguing that predictions of collapse often ignore human adaptability, technological progress, and the capacity of markets to solve problems. This is one reason the book has been praised as a defense of free trade and criticized as overly confident. The limitation of the argument is also part of its significance. Ridley strongly favors bottom-up adaptation, but this can lead him to understate inequality, distributional conflict, and the ways power can shape market outcomes. Still, the book's challenge to pessimism is intellectually important because it forces readers to ask whether fear of change is sometimes stronger than evidence. It is a book about progress, but also about the dangers of assuming that progress must be directed from above. In conclusion, The Rational Optimist is best suited for readers interested in economics, long-term history, innovation, globalization, and debates about human progress. It will appeal to anyone who wants a clear, argument-driven defense of trade, specialization, and the idea that prosperity can emerge spontaneously from countless small exchanges rather than from central design. The main practical value of the book is that it changes how readers interpret modern life instead of focusing only on crises. It encourages attention to historical trends, system dynamics, and the cumulative power of innovation. Intellectually, it is useful as a bridge between economics and evolutionary thinking, especially for readers who enjoy big-picture synthesis. What makes it stand out in its genre is its confident scope. Many books about economic progress focus narrowly on policy, data, or current events. Ridley instead offers a sweeping narrative that connects Stone Age exchange to modern markets and technical innovation to the evolution of ideas. Even readers who do not agree with every conclusion are likely to find the framing distinctive. It is more expansive than a standard economics book and more evidence-based than a simple manifesto. That combination gives it lasting appeal as a provocation to pessimism and a defense of the historical case for human improvement. If you would like to support Matt Ridley, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.